We're here for Talking Sports with Goob. It has been a minute since we have been with you all. It is good to be back. A lot of things have happened. We are in the middle of a very active situation happening in the NBA right now. It is nice to come on here and not have to rehash a Blazers arena situation. For the first time, we have no updates on that. And like I believe, no news is good news on that front, but we do have to talk about what is happening with the Los Angeles Clippers, the circumventing of the salary cap when they signed Kawhi Leonard, and the now fallout from that, losing five first-round picks, multiple staffers getting suspended, lots of fines being levied against ownership and members of the organization in a situation that we first heard about from Pablo Torre about a year ago on his podcast. He did an amazing 15-parter on this whole investigation, covering it from start to finish and unearthing a lot of things. And we sit here now a day after decision day, and the Clippers are the most hopeless organization right now in the NBA.
Kawhi Leonard has got to be the most poisoned signing. I don't know. Got to be one of the worst signings a team has ever made.
Yeah, one of the worst deals in NBA history.
Absolutely. Not only holding the team hostage, but having to jump through all these different hoops to afford him to circumvent the salary to where they can get away with, you know, paying him off the books because the franchise simply can't just pay him that much with company money and still be competitive.
Right.
And but my thing is with this, and I wanted to kind of get your take on this, is if the NBA's goal and punishment is to basically so the owner's suspended.
Mm-hmm.
But then to also lose, what is it, 6 years worth of?
5 years.
Future draft picks.
Because they don't own their own first round picks.
They don't have any picks.
So I believe it will start in 28 or 29 and go through
right
32 or 33.
Essentially, because the franchise is already poisoned.
Yeah.
People don't really want to sign there. If they're going to go to LA, they're going to sign with the Lakers, not them. This is already a poisoned franchise. Why give them this death penalty and just let them do all this? Why not make them sell the team? I feel like this hurts the NBA more by just kind of like being like, all right, this team is not only in a major market and could compete with the other team in that major market, but now we're just like, we're not even going to give them a chance to grow. You guys are in so much trouble that it's going to cost a lot of money. The standard's already been set, not only in the NBA, but multiple different leagues, that if you break the law, you have to sell your team.
I think, and I agree with you 100%. I think where the scuttlebutt would come from is it would be such a failure and a loss for Adam Silver to take, because this would be the second time the NBA would step in under Silver's commissionership and had to have the Clippers sell their team.
Right, and maybe you move them. Maybe you find a new home for the Clippers, or you started over.
Yeah.
But I still think even that is more beneficial to the league and helpful to the league than necessarily just like making this team now a joke for the next however many years. I mean, sure, they could get signings, and Ballmer definitely makes enough money to flip the bill for exclusively having to sign players instead of drafting them.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it still carries this stigma to it and has this thing attached to it that won't go away until they get their picks back. People won't right. stop talking about it until they get their picks back. Where if you sell the team, give them a new owner, yeah, sure, it's happened again. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because this is not unprecedented. This happened in 2000 when the Minnesota Timberwolves brought in Joe Johnson as a rookie, only signed him to a one-year deal, but they had a promise in place to sign him to a much bigger lucrative deal after his rookie year to circumvent the cap. And it's really what hindered them from building a team behind Kevin Garnett for such a long time, not having their first-round picks. I think it was 3 or 4 years in their case. So the NBA has done this before for similar reasons, but nothing as egregious as what the Clippers did in this circumstance. I mean, they had multiple shell companies funneling money to the shell company that they had Kawhi hired to, but they didn't even have any other employees hired to make it look legit enough. I mean, it is so hard to understand and explain, but because it is such a convoluted scheme that they had in place.
They had somebody on their staff whose job was to make a paper trail
right.
so that it looked like they were doing everything on board. And yes, I get that this would be the second time that the Clippers would have to be sold over a major controversy, but isn't that more of a reason to get them out of LA and maybe even rebrand them? Like, I don't know. There's
I don't think you're wrong, and I agree. I just think it would be a very hard pill for the league and Commissioner Silver to swallow and have hang on his, you know, quote unquote resume.
It's going to be there regardless. It happened.
Like, I agree.
I feel like the best way to change that is calling an audible and kind of trying to get a new image out there
and try to actually fix the situation right. and just sweep it under the rug.
Right. Well, not because I don't even necessarily think he's sweeping it under the rug, and we haven't seen the steps they're going to take now after all of this has happened, because the NBA obviously has some things they have to do to make sure this stops happening or doesn't happen again, or to monitor it.
Well, I mean, the next step is Steve Ballmer's gonna sue the league and sue.
Well, yes, because he's trying to say that this isn't what happened,
right?
And you know, that's what everybody does. Well, they're gonna do their due process and everything. Like I said, I have a hard time believing he just didn't know this happened.
Well, this is what happens when you lie to the league. I mean, the reason. You can look at the punishments, and then you'll look at what happened to Kawhi. Kawhi only getting fined $700,000 after he took over, I think it was like $45 million in illegal payments. So you're like, why is he not getting more in trouble? It's because when he sat down with the league, he didn't lie to them, and he was honest with them.
Right.
You know, it'd be far different, you know, if the league had caught Kawhi lying like they caught Steve Ballmer lying.
I still have that's another thing too. It comes back to the having a hard time to believe, but to just think that to just have your business manager who's also a family member and not know what's going on, I had an easier time believing a translator was doing this sketchy stuff.
I think what happened in that meeting is. We know you know. You don't have to say you know. Tell us what you know, and we will get it out there that you didn't really know. But be honest with us. I kind of have a feeling the truth, you know, whose story is right? The truth normally lies somewhere in the middle on these things. And I think this is one of those things where I feel like in that meeting that he had with the league was like, this is what we have. You can be honest and get off far easier and not miss any time and still be able to complete the trade and go to Toronto, because that's the other part of this is now the Toronto deal is going to get pushed through in the next couple days, and Kawhi is going to be gone, and the Clippers really are going to be left with the biggest PR nightmare in maybe professional sports history.
If this was here's my other issue with that too, because like if this was any other player, there's a handful of players that if this happens to, they're safe.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi just happens to be one of them.
Right.
The league loves Kawhi. Mm-hmm. They use Kawhi for the Kawhi is a flagship player for a lot of different things that they do. They love him. And he's going to make the Hall of Fame. And he's a Hall of Famer that didn't get in a lot of trouble until now.
Right. No, 100%.
And so of course they're gonna be like, we gotta protect that image because we love Kawhi Leonard, and the last thing we need is this black stain on a guy that is going to be a Hall of Famer and a guy we absolutely love. Doesn't make it okay.
No, I'm not saying it makes it okay, but I mean, you know, it's same thing in court, right? You got two defendants that commit a crime. First person that speaks is going to get the better deal.
Yeah, and
I really feel like at the end of the day, that's what happened. And then Ballmer sat down and he lied to the league multiple times, right. And the league caught him in the lie.
They're going to make an example.
They are making an example out of him. You know, to be an owner and not be able to be suspended and not be able to have contact with your team for a whole season,
and not being allowed in the facility,
can't go to the games. Like, we'll have no say at what happens. I mean, no say at what happens next offseason at all. You know, allegedly, and now you're
losing most of your star players at that point.
And now you've got the league that's going to be, you know, breathing down their neck, you know, wanting to go through every email, every text message, everything, to make sure that everybody who's suspended is following those rules and there's not backdoor communication, because, you know, all these punishments also open up the door for the Clippers to get themselves in even more trouble by trying to break these rules and do what they've just done.
Right. Well, and also so that they don't. Because
the more I think about it, you're right, they should sell the team.
Right, because they still have to play basketball. They still have to sell tickets. They still have to make the NBA want to put their games on TV. And by giving them this sentence, you have nobody that they can draft. There's going to be handcuffs on the money you can spend, and the stars that are still on the team are not going to want to stay on that team anymore, and nobody's going to want to go to that team. So yes,
there's no winners in this situation.
No, because it hurts the league more, mm-hmm. even more by having, now you have a garbage bin of a team. I hate to use this example, but it's like the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns are consistently bad.
Yeah.
Consistently bad. Don't get any better. Even when they try to get better, they don't. Mm-hmm. They don't have the support. The league calls them a cornerstone franchise, but doesn't treat them like one. Doesn't do anything to help them or benefit them. It's like the only people that go to games are Browns fans, and the Clippers don't have that legacy to live off of. Mm-hmm. So they're just going to be even worse. People aren't going to go to the games. People aren't going to spend the money to go watch that team. You're going to have to hand out season tickets.
Yeah.
and the NBA makes no money from that. There's no getting something out of them
no upside.
Well, there's, like, even then, they're not getting paid back for all the trouble.
Right.
They're not making money off of it. The team's not getting better. They aren't getting a better image from it. Like, the stuff they should be getting back for their wrongdoing, they're not going to get.
The biggest shame in all of this is that they, like you were talking about, they just completed and finished by far the best basketball facility in the NBA. And now that stadium will see so much meaningless basketball, quote unquote, over the next couple years. You know who the real loser is? Sure, it's Clipper fans, but it's that building in particular that is going to get robbed of so much great basketball the draft picks last 5 years, but this will take a far longer time to come back from than them 5 years. I mean, it's not like they're going to get one first round pick and back, and then everything's going to change for them. You're 100% right. The league should make them sell the team.
Right.
There's no upside in this situation for anybody. For the league, for the owner, for the fan base.
If I was the WNBA, if I was the WNBA team in LA, I'd play all my games in the Clippers' new stadium.
In the Intuit Dome, yeah.
They would. I would because it's brand new.
Yeah.
It's a great basketball facility.
Yeah.
And it's the only way they're gonna get anybody buying tickets to go.
Yeah.
And honestly, they could benefit from it because it's not the Clippers. It won't be the Clippers centered.
Right.
I don't know. They're gonna have to double down on concerts and things like that,
yeah.
events to make their money back because there's just nobody gonna be. Yeah, they gotta move. Like, you could move them back to San Diego. You could move them into Canada. You could make them into a team in Mexico. Like, all of those things would make you more money than what the Clippers are going to make you now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe part of them not. Well, you could sell the team and still keep the stadium, so that doesn't really. Never mind.
Yeah, I mean, because there's still ways you could use it. You could sell, yeah. You don't have to move them. Maybe that's the reason why you don't move them. You just bought a brand new stadium.
Yeah, it's because that building is so nice, it might actually keep them around.
Right, and instead of giving them this death penalty, you get rid of the guy that orchestrated it all. You make him sell the team. Because what's stopping him from trying more stuff, especially if he's willing to sue you guys?
Well, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about him on some secret cell phone, you know, communicating with the people that, you know, are now, you know, quote unquote in charge.
Right.
That's would be my biggest worry if I'm the NBA is, you know, you've now levied these penalties. Now, how are we going to go about enforcing all of them over the course of them? Because, you know, it's hard for an owner to step away and not have any contact with anybody on his team or in his organization or in his front office and talk about anything basketball related. You know, you can't run into Joe Smith in the scouting department at the grocery store and, you know, say, hey, how was the game last night? Did you see how many points blah, blah, blah scored? You know? So, I mean, that's where I would be focused on now at the league, as the league, you know, figuring out how they're going to get ready to, you know, enforce that. And of course, after the decision came out, the Clippers came out and we vehemently deny everything the league is saying that we've done or all the allegations against us. And the thing about it is I don't believe there is a way for anything to be appealed on their decision. It would simply have to go straight to a lawsuit in an situation. So I don't think there's arbitration on the table or anything at all. So next steps, I'm pretty sure, would just simply be an owner suing the league and the commissioner.
I wouldn't be surprised if this all this legal stuff goes down, right? And then he gets in so much trouble and he owes so much money that he sells the team anyways.
Yeah.
He has to sell the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or else he takes too big of a loss himself.
Yeah.
That he's not going to make back in the Clippers.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense. And we don't want to get into any financial legal trouble over here. So we better make sure that we throw it over to break so Janu doesn't come hunting us down. The producer in action, we are going to step away here at KXRW 99.9 FM.
For over 20 years, Vancouver Family Magazine has been covering local news, recreation, travel, education, parenting, personalities, and more. We connect your family to people, places, ideas, organizations, helpful resources, and local stories. Pick up your copy every month at over 300 locations all around Clark County or read online at vancouverfamilymagazine.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X for even more local news and family fun at Vancouver Family.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years, licensed in Washington State. Our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at buckleylaw.net. Again, that's buckleylaw.net. Buckley & Associates. We speak your language.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
Northwest Furniture Bank's mission is to restore hope, dignity, and stability by recycling donated furniture to people in need. It's a wordy way of saying we connect people with stuff to people who really need that stuff. We partner with local social services to transform empty rooms into homes. If you have home furnishings or housewares you no longer need, or if you are in need of furniture, you can visit nwfurniturebank.org to learn more.
Shriners Children's has opened a new pediatric orthopedic clinic in Vancouver. The clinic offers evaluation and follow-up care for children and teens with orthopedic conditions, including sports-related injuries. Care is available regardless of a family's ability to pay. Details about the Vancouver clinic are at shrinerschildrens.org/Vancouver Clinic.
KXRW is supported by founding partners, Morel Inc., Print, and Marketing. Since 1993, Morel Inc. has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative solutions from their woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop. Morel Inc.'s experienced staff uses the latest technology to solve clients' marketing needs. Find Morel Inc. at morelinc.com. That's MORELINK.com.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation pays for local reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including homelessness, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
Welcome back to Talkin' Sports in the Couve. We are here, two more segments to go. This one and one more. And we have made it through the dog days of not a lot of sports in the spring and the summer. We are back. It is football time. College football, week one, officially kicking off today. The big slate of games Saturday. No, like, super crazy big top 25 matchups coming for you this week. That'll follow next week. But it is just nice to have meaningful football back. And it also means we're just 1 week away from the return of the National Football League. And that is really going to be the main event that we are all excited for. I cannot wait to sit down on Saturday, turn on the TV, and watch college football. And I'm sure I'll find that one random, meaningless game that nobody's watching that probably turns in to a banger and a barn burner. And that's what we're looking for on week one. Those unexpected gems on the schedule. The Ducks play. Not super worried about this one, though. We got Boise State. First couple of games are not going to be super difficult for the Oregon Ducks this season. And, you know, I'm excited to see what the Ducks are going to bring to the table this year. I am very optimistic about my Ducks heading into the season, like I always am. I will always be drinking the Ducks Kool-Aid and will always be the biggest Duck defender and Duck optimist on the planet. And, Caleb definitely knows that about me for sure. I drink the Ducks Kool-Aid heavy, don't I?
I mean, I guess the best example is the fact that you're like, oh, I'm not worried about Boise State. And yes, the last few times you guys have played each other, you have beat them. But every time, almost every, the last three games at least, the last three times you guys played them at least, it's been the difference of 3 points.
there's been some closer games than I would have liked to admit.
I just wouldn't count out Boise State. I'm obviously not gonna change your mind, and that's the gangrene that people catch when they become Oregon fans. They just kind of get absurdly delusional about everything.
Oh my gosh, we're number two in the nation. Being absurdly delusional about my team taking care of business against Boise State isn't crazy.
Ed, the last few games, you guys have only beat them by three, so they're not that. It's not that.
I mean, it's a completely different Boise State team. So yeah, you don't got to. Don't got a guy like
since the transfer running. Since the transfer portal exists.
I agree. That's literally what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So you're like, it's a worse team even though they have a transfer portal. You're silly.
And they don't have a player like Ashton Jeanty on their roster.
We haven't seen him play yet. How do you know?
Okay.
We didn't know. You didn't know who Ashton Jeanty was until he stepped on the field and started playing. So how would we know?
Entering that year where everybody
that
knew.
Year, yes, but the year before he had to have a breakout year. He had to play well for you to recognize him. So none of these guys have played yet.
Okay, nobody has played yet.
All right, so let's document it right now, okay? Oregon's going undefeated. Dante Moore, I had to think about his name, mind you, is going to be the Heisman Trophy winner. absolutely nothing wild is ever going to happen, even though we just came off of Indiana.
That's not what I ever said.
It's recorded, what so we can go back.
I never said nothing crazy happens to the Ducks. I've never once said that.
I never said you got nothing to worry about.
I don't feel like I have anything to worry about as a Duck heading into the year.
I just showed you why you
because we played Boise State close
always
a few times.
Always play Boise State close. You always play Boise State close.
Not always. The last couple times, I
just gave you 3 years of examples. The last three times you guys played them, it was accumulatively 3 points.
Okay. I'm sorry that I like to be optimistic about my team heading into the season.
I'm just saying you can't just like if you're like we can't just count out Boise State. I think every time we have count out Boise State, guys like Kellen Moore or Ashton Jeanty show up. Like they have
but nobody there's anybody like those players that you're
not
mentioning.
Yet.
But heading into those games against the Ducks, those players were being talked about as game stoppers. Nobody is being talked about as somebody that can come in and stop a defensive line that returns everybody and is by far the best defensive line heading back, not just coming from Ducks fans, but coming from all the national media talking about the best quarterback coming back in the nation, where all the NFL scouts are already talking about him being the best player in a loaded quarterback class. But again, I'm just drinking Duck Kool-Aid, folks.
No football has been played yet.
A team that has not lost to any team that has not won the national championship. We're bringing back so many players.
That the last year didn't matter. Like. You can't bring up that example if you're saying the years before don't matter. Now there's certain things that matter?
On the grand scheme of things, when you look at a football program, there's things that matter. You bring players back. They come back with an energy and a hunger to compete and play better than they did the year before. Coming off of both teams only losing to national champions, the last three losses the Ducks have only come to teams that have went on to win the final. I get it. Oregon wasn't that team that went on to win the final. I know that's what you're about to say, and that's fine.
I'm just going to harken back to the fact that you're talking about last year, and you just said last year didn't matter.
Well, when you're setting up a season,
it only matters in certain points.
Yes, that's always true. So, okay, how do you feel about Oklahoma? Because I can turn this around and do what you're doing to me about Oklahoma.
I think that the SEC has a lot of open spots. That's why they're talking about Missouri being as good as they are. John Mattier has come back from an injury.
Well, you don't know if he's going to come back and play well. He played okay at the end of last year.
He came back. The entire internet.
You don't know because it's a new year. You don't know because it's a new year.
Their entire internet's talking about his preseason far more than
right.
Dante.
I listen to
sports radio every single day. I read all the reports. I pay attention to every single thing, and I've heard more about John Mattier than I have about Dante Moore.
Because you don't listen when people talked about
I do. I look at everything and read everything and look at everything. I listen to national programs, and they do not talk about Oregon.
Nobody's talking. Who's talking about Oklahoma?
They're talking about John Mattier. They're saying him by name.
Okay, so you
not
got
saying,
so,
not
so
saying
not,
Dante
not
Moore.
Talking about your program like people are talking
not
about the Oregon program.
Not saying Dante
saying
Moore.
Oregon is the best program heading into the year. The
I'm
best
not
built.
Hearing that. No, I'm not hearing
okay.
that.
Okay, I have plenty of clips I can send you are plenty of people saying that nationally. I'd love to hear some of the John Mateer love. Not saying he's not a good player. Not saying he's not deserving of it, because I think he is. I just think you have rose-colored glasses on that you can never hear.
Coming from the Oregon fan, that's really funny.
Never hear anything, because I can admit when my team is not performed, and I come back with optimistic that we're going to be better and going to win and going to succeed.
There's a difference between optimism and arrogance.
I think there's a little bit of truth to both. Sometimes I might be, but it's because I'm so optimistic about the team. It might come off as being arrogant.
Saying you don't have anybody to worry about is wild.
As a Duck fan, looking at my schedule, I don't feel super concerned about anybody other than Ohio State. That is the only game on my schedule that I'm super concerned about heading into this year, and I think 90% of Duck fans would say that exact same thing.
So you got it. So the only time you guys are going to get tested is Ohio State?
On paper, that's what I feel like, yeah. That's by far the
that
by
right
far
there
the
is an example
schedule.
Of arrogance. You're in the pack. You're in the Big Ten.
I know that I'm in the Big Ten.
That's an classic example of arrogance. When a team like Indiana came out of nowhere and won the national title last year, and I'm not saying they're going to repeat or I don't even know if they're going to be competitive next year, but a team absolutely nobody talked about and wrote off won a national title last year, and you're in your conference, and you're saying the only team that's going to test you is Ohio State,
right? Because I choose to be an optimistic Duck fan.
That's not optimism. That's the line right there between optimism and arrogance.
I don't think that's arrogant. It's not arrogant to think that your team is going to walk in and win every game. That is you being an optimistic fan. You thinking that your team is good enough to go and do that. I'm going to be the first person that sits here after a Ducks loss and it takes the fall for it and admits it and fall on that sword. If I'm sitting here, if I was trying to be arrogant about it, then I wouldn't be able to admit the faults as the team has had and has. Right now, the only question mark on this team, everybody says this, is the offensive line, and it's not even that big of a question mark.
That's a big issue to have. Especially
it's
you,
not even that big of a question
with
mark.
The offense you run. With the offense you run,
we have three starters returning on the O line. It's not even the huge question mark.
You can have three starters if they're saying the starters aren't very good, and that it's worrying you in a spread offense that relies on how quickly and moving to the right place the offensive line needs to do. I think that's an issue.
But what I'm saying is people have to nitpick to find a group that is not as talented. Potentially this year for the Ducks.
I wouldn't call that nitpicking. That's a classic example that they use for any NFL team. The first thing they look at is the line. I wouldn't necessarily say that's nitpicking.
What I'm saying is everything looks so good that they are nitpicking to find a potential problem. The offensive line looks good, but if there's one group that might be an issue, it would be them. That's what all I've been hearing.
It's one thing to hear about it. It's a whole nother thing to see it. And we've got a week or so until the games start. Sure, you're playing Boise State. And honestly, if you're going to get even more criticism if it becomes true that the only test you have is Ohio State, then you start getting into.
Not if we're dog walking people.
Lots of teams have dog walked teams, but then we're like had just about everybody go. Well, they didn't play anybody.
That's the beauty of having a playoff system with you winning your conference, guaranteeing you a spot. I mean, a lot of that gets taken care of.
There's no saying that you're going to win your conference.
If we're dog walking people, then we'll win our conference.
You haven't played anybody yet.
I agree.
We're going in the same circle.
No, you were asking what I thought about something, so I said if we dog walked everybody, this would happen.
Yeah, and they're gonna go, okay, you didn't play anybody, and then the playoffs are gonna happen, and then you have to win a national title. And if you don't, then none of this argument that we're having you can ever have again.
The way the playoff system is formatted is so ass backwards. It's ridiculous. I'm so passionate about this stuff. I could talk all day, come at it from a lot of different angles, but I don't have time because I got my producer, Jono, in my ear saying, hey, we got to go pay those bills. We got to go to commercial break. We'll be back with two more action-packed segments of Talkin' Sports in the Coup.
Northwest Furniture Bank's mission is to restore hope, dignity, and stability by recycling donated furniture to people in need. It's a wordy way of saying we connect people with stuff to people who really need that stuff. We partner with local social services to transform empty rooms into homes. If you have home furnishings or housewares you no longer need, or if you are in need of furniture, you can visit nwfurniturebank.org to learn more.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years, licensed in Washington State. Our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at BuckleyLaw.net. Again, that's BuckleyLaw.net. Buckley & Associates. We speak your language.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
Shriners Children's has opened a new pediatric orthopedic clinic in Vancouver. The clinic offers evaluation and follow-up care for children and teens with orthopedic conditions, including sports-related injuries. Care is available regardless of a family's ability to pay. Details about the Vancouver clinic are at shrinerschildrens.org/Vancouver Clinic.
KXRW is supported by founding partners, Morrell Inc., Print, and Marketing. Since 1993, Morrell Inc. has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative solutions from their woman-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop. Morrell Inc.'s experienced staff uses the latest technology to solve clients' marketing needs. Find Morrell Inc. at morrellinc.com. That's MORELINK.com.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation pays for local reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including homelessness, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
For over 20 years, Vancouver Family Magazine has been covering local news, recreation, travel, education, parenting, personalities, and more. We connect your family to people, places, ideas, organizations, helpful resources, and local stories. Pick up your copy every month at over 300 locations all around Clark County or read online at VancouverFamilyMagazine.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X for even more local news and family fun at Vancouver Family.
Welcome back to Talking Sports in the Couve here. Ryan and Rip talking all things sports. Sometimes when you're in the jungle, things get a little heated. And that is all good and fun in nature. And that's what last segment turned into. Me and Caleb like to go back and forth on college football and our team sometimes. And sorry that got the best of us for a moment. But we are here. We're back. We're recovered. And we're moving on to talking more football. But the other football, the big enchilada, the NFL preseason rounded out. And some thoughts and feelings about my Pittsburgh Steelers heading into the season. Definitely a lot of question marks on this team, but heading
out of the preseason, the biggest question we were all wondering is, would the Steelers keep four quarterbacks? Would they trim one? Would Mason Rudolph maybe be traded or moved out, and the young guys would just be 1-2 and develop behind Rodgers? Steelers made the decision to keep all four of their quarterbacks, and this is the first time they've done that since the 1950s, or sorry, 1995. Way different than the 1950s. So the Steelers have made the decision to keep all four quarterbacks: Rodgers, Drew Aller, Will Howard, and Mason Rudolph on the roster heading into the year. Still think before the trade deadline, Mason could be a trade candidate for some teams that are either experiencing quarterback issues, experiencing that random unexpected quarterback injury out there. He's been such a solid backup that, you know, I think you might be able to find somebody desperate enough, maybe get a fourth or a third round pick out of him. So that might be a route, or you just keep him on the roster as the backup and you let Drew and Will develop. Both showed really good signs during the preseason. I think the thing that was really exciting for me watching Drew Aller, because I was not a Drew Aller fan in college and at Penn State. I mean, me and you have talked about him many a times, and my issue with him was always he never showed up and won that big game for Penn State when Penn State needed him to be the game, to be the big game quarterback. He never would show up on the big game. And so, you know, one thing that McCarthy said coming into camp, Mike McCarthy, the quarterback whisperer, said that, you know, we had him install everything that he learned about playing quarterback at Penn State. And they have worked on reteaching him, quote unquote, the right way to play the position. And you could see that with the little things like his footwork in the preseason, his decision making on when to throw the ball long. And honestly, when he did throw the ball long, it looked really good. His deep ball still continues to have some zing on it and look really nice. I think, and I didn't think this before, but I think the long-term answer at quarterback might be on the Steelers roster already.
So what was the, did they classify what the difference is between keeping him on the roster, him or Will, than necessarily practice squatting them and not taking up the roster spot, but still getting to do a lot of the same stuff as if you were like a number four quarterback?
I think the big difference there is that, you know, anybody could go at that point and grab and sign those guys off the Steelers practice squad. And so I think which is good because it means the organization sees enough in Drew and Will that they want to protect both of these guys and not leave that up to chance and risk, you know, one of them getting to the practice squad and then getting picked up by, you know, some, you know, random team, Cardinals, you
well,
know.
The Bengals are a classic example of always needing a backup quarterback.
Yeah, at some point during the year. Yeah.
Because, yeah, they can't keep him. They can't keep Burrow safe or healthy.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the last thing you want is for that potential star to end up on a division team.
Yeah.
Was there any point when this season started, did any of the experts or any of the Steelers reporters ever consider that Rodgers may not start this year?
No.
With these guys behind him?
No. Rodgers.
Not even Rudolph?
No. Rodgers is, he's getting a pay increase from what he came in and took last year because he's still getting a bunch of money this year from the Jets, but not as much as he got last year. So, I mean, we're not, I think we paid Aaron 20 or 23 million. No. He always came back knowing it was his job, knowing that he was going to be there for this year and helping mentor in the quarterback room.
So there was never like this, like, not necessarily the same thing because obviously neither of those guys were the first pick, but no Cousins Mendoza type of situation where it's like, this guy's probably going to be our future. Rodgers is going to play for X amount of time and we're going to put him in at some point.
I think the only time I heard stuff like that from Steeler reporters and stuff was when they would talk about if they would see Drew or Mason or Drew or Will or Mason if Rodgers got hurt. But there was never an inclination of, you know, even if the season, you know, if we tank the season, then we're just going to throw one of those guys out there. Not even that was mentioned.
Okay. Well, so I guess my next question would be, did any of them play well enough to pass Mason in the depth chart? Because Mason didn't play very well.
Well, he didn't play very. I mean, he only played.
He played a small amount.
Two or three series in the first preseason game, and then the rest of the preseason. But it was enough. What McCarthy said is, "I saw what I needed to see from Mason."
Which part of me wonders if that means that he's kind of wrote off Mason in a sense that, like, I know what I'm getting out of him. I can use him, but my focus is on these two young guys.
I think there's a sense to that, but I don't think it's a sense because he wrote him off. I think it's because Mason does what Mason does. You get consistency from him. So I'm going to work with the younger guys because I know what I have in Mason.
Right.
Which I think is a little bit of a different mindset, but kind of in the same tune of what you're saying, but more in like, I believe in the guy, not I'm going to write him off, if that makes sense.
Right. But and coming off of a off season where Jacoby Brissett and Malik Willis played themselves into jobs, mm-hmm. why wasn't there that same appeal? Like, yes, they were talking about trading Rudolph, and he's got wins under his belt. He's got an example of being able to run a complicated offense. Mm-hmm. Because they may not have been great offenses, but the offenses that, gosh, now I'm forgetting your ex-coach's name all of a sudden, Mike Tomlin put together are not easy offenses. They may not be great offenses, but they're complicated offenses to understand and run. Why wasn't Mason necessarily somebody people were considering as that placeholder than necessarily, well, obviously Jacoby just inherited the team, but like Malik Willis got paid.
Right.
Off of just showing that you can be manageable.
I think when he signed with the Titans and that didn't work out, it kind of hurt his reputation in that regard.
I forgot he left it.
Yeah, he left and went to the Titans, was their starting quarterback between him and Will Levis for about three quarters of a season. And he played okay, but I mean that was on one of the more poorly put together teams.
Yeah, that team got like the top ever. Was a top three pick after that season.
Yeah, I mean so and just terrible O line, no protection. So I think a lot of that comes from him making the wrong choice of where to go next. Yeah. But at the point, he didn't have a lot of opportunities to go walk into a starting job. So I understand why he went back to Tennessee, but I think the reason he went to Tennessee is the reason he is back as the Steelers' backup quarterback and never came in with a shot of competing with Rodgers, which is, I think, kind of what you were asking.
Well, and not even necessarily that. It was the fact, like the different examples of him playing so well with you guys as a backup.
Okay.
Why he didn't necessarily draw the same attention from teams that needed a serviceable, not even necessarily an answer at quarterback, but a serviceable quarterback, even if they were planning to have a top draft pick the next year. Like the example is like the Dolphins. The Dolphins were right on that edge, but then they let guys like, you know, Tyreek Hill walk and things like that. And they've still got good, like Achane's a great player. They still have a good receiving core, but that team's not screaming playoffs with Malik Willis. Maybe they'll surprise us. Maybe they'll surprise us. But and it's the same thing with like Jacoby Brissett, who held the team hostage.
Yeah.
After getting that job, it was just a wonder to me why those guys drew that attention and got paid and got those opportunities, but not necessarily a Rudolph. Even with the opportunity to trade for him now, people didn't take that opportunity.
And maybe the Steelers just really want him to be the backup. I mean, maybe they're maybe teams have called about him and the Steelers are asking a ridiculous, you know, second round pick or something for, you know, for him. I don't think that's true.
Right.
But I think Mason just, I think he makes it easy because he just comes in, puts his head down and does his job.
Right.
And so there's not a lot of like questions or drama from him about wanting to be the guy or needing to be the guy. He's.
But that would arguably bring more appeal to teams looking for their.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
Yeah, I was just wondering like why he wasn't getting that, because last offseason was the offseason for second string guys to earn a job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was a lot of major injuries to a lot of major quarterbacks that allowed a lot of guys to get to play.
Right.
And Malik Willis performed, Jacoby Brissett performed, but, you know, some would argue that in the opportunities that Rudolph got, he performed too, and he's arguably done it a little longer and has had to lead different teams and has had more examples. I was just really surprised that a team wouldn't take a chance on that.
Well, and you can also make this argument is because, yeah, we've been, you know, kind of consistent, but we're always consistent and always finding ourselves pushing for the playoffs. So it's not like he hasn't been, it's not like he was playing meaningless football games,
right,
like some of the other guys that you were just talking about as well. So, you know, that's another interesting point that kind of goes to what you're saying is why was nobody calling for him? Because he has shown that he can play in, you know, a more meaningful type situation or a game.
Right.
So, Is that a really fair point?
I mean, maybe people are thinking that the reason he was like the success came through the team he was on as well.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Because who he has around him,
right? Because
yeah.
We've had classic examples of that of guys performing really well on one team and then getting a starting job and getting paid and not being good at all.
And I think that goes to what I was talking about a few minutes ago with that strike with him going to Tennessee. You know, a strike against him because he already went somewhere where there was nobody around him and he wasn't able to, you know, elevate. You know, there's players at quarterback that are able to go into a situation no matter where they are and will elevate things. I mean, he didn't have the best numbers last year, but you look at the receivers he had last year. Aaron Rodgers came in and elevated the Steelers offense, and I think he's going to take a big step this year because we have far better athletes around him at receiver that are going to be able to go up and make some of these catches that he needs
and better
him to
play
make.
Calling.
Yeah,
better
100,
play calls.
100% better play calling.
You know, I think you guys are kind of in that same. You guys are in a level just under, actually, just mm-hmm. under a team like the Rams that have this. Even I wouldn't even necessarily call it pressure, but an expectation to make a run.
Right.
You guys are like, because you guys didn't necessarily bring players out of retirement mm-hmm. or sign the leading sacker ever to a contract, but you also went all in on bringing back Rodgers instead of like 100%. Being like, okay, we've got a huge draft class coming up, let's make a move.
Right.
And it's like you kind of like, especially since it's Rodgers last year, all this mm-hmm. stuff like. You almost got to be like, we really need to at least go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, try to make a run. I mean, any Steeler fan would be happy with a playoff win. I mean, we can push for a Super Bowl, and I would love to be pushing for a Super Bowl. But for me, a successful season for the Steelers looks like making the playoffs and getting a playoff win, something that Mike Tomlin hadn't been able to do in right. 5 to 10 years.
But I mean, there's even an argument saying that you guys should win more than one game.
Oh, I wouldn't disagree. I wouldn't disagree. But as a Steeler fan, I would be, you know, completely content winning one game and then losing the next playoff game. Because, again, progress, a step forward. The one thing I'm super excited about is, you know, you mentioned it, play calling. Man, during the preseason was one of the things that I noticed the most is just the difference of what this team could look like on the offense. There was one in particular play on like the first game. It was a meaningful little dump out pass, but it was normally a situation where the Steelers would have called one of the stupid bubble screen, throw the ball behind the line of scrimmage to the receiver plays that never worked for us. And so to us simply to see us dump the ball out positively for 4 or 5 yards, I'm like, oh, it's going to actually be refreshing to watch an offensive minded coach call our offense this year, something that we haven't had, and I know this for a fact, since the 1950s.
Yeah, it would definitely be frustrating too, because you guys have had examples of great players on that offense that have kind of either went by the wayside or had a huge peak, but then that was kind of it. The most recent example would
Killer
be
bees.
Najee Harris
even more recent, yeah.
Yeah, Najee Harris would be my most recent example, because Najee Harris was the leading rusher.
You guys signed Najee. Yeah, I think it's a sneaky under the radar move. I love it.
I think I like the way he's performed so far in the preseason, and I love that he doesn't have to be the bell cow. So that's going to be a huge part.
If he comes in and gives you guys 15 to 20 carries and does his job, not even, he could come in and get 10 to 15.
Right, because he's got to do is split it. He's got to do what Devin Singletary couldn't, mm-hmm. and share the reps with Tyrone Tracy and with Cam Scataboo. Tyrone Tracy is fresh off of a 1,000-yard season again. It's back-to-back seasons with 1,000 yards. Everybody loves Cam. I still got to see more out of Cam Scataboo. I got to see him stay on the field longer. We've only seen one season, and with the way he plays, he's got to stay on the field. When at that position, it's one thing to be like, okay, you take a lot of hits at quarterback, but when running backs actively look for contact and things like that, you got to start getting worried.
Yeah.
Because he's not Derrick Henry fast.
Well, and every year that Najee didn't have a serious injury, which was every year but last year, he was a 1,000-yard runner.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's something yeah. that a rookie running back for 4 straight years hadn't accomplished since the early 2000s. When Pittsburgh didn't re-sign him, I was irritated.
Najee should have retired
as
a Steeler.
I loved Najee as a Steeler. I loved having him back there. I'm really excited to see what he can do for you and your Giants this year. I hope he has a huge resurgence.
Well, just to close things out, give me what are you we've gotten the confirmation that Aaron Donald is coming back to the Rams. We watched them sign Myles Garrett. They're taking the steps. They've taken the steps on offense as well. Is this a Super Bowl team? And is anything less than a Super Bowl a complete and utter failure for the Rams?
100%. 100%. They fixed their secondary. They brought in the scariest duo on defensive linemen that we might ever see in NFL history. I think it's a Super Bowl or bust kind of year. I think if you're not on that podium as a Rams fan at the end of the day, there's a lot of reasons to complain.
And he's especially if Stafford's going to walk off into the sunset in the next 2 years.
Dude, that'd be so cool if he won the ring and got to walk off in the sunset. Not a lot of quarterbacks get to do it. That'd be awesome for him after suffering with the Lions for so long. What a great end to his career.
Absolutely.
This has been Talking Sports in the Coop here at KXRW 99.9 FM.